Hello, I'm Russell Rowland, author of 56 Counties, A Montana Journey. A few years ago, I visited every county in our state and interviewed people from all walks of life. I then read dozens of books about the history of Montana and the West. I wanted to explore what it means to be from Montana, how it impacts the people here. This program is a continuation of that conversation. I'm talking to people about how Montana has shaped them and what they are doing to shape Montana. Welcome to 56 Counties. As with most of eastern Montana, the main source of income in Fallon County is agriculture, although there has been the promise of jobs coming for construction of the Keystone Pipeline. Jerry and Kathy Sikorsky live on a farm where Jerry grew up, halfway between Baker, the county seat of Fallon County, and Ekalaka, the county seat of Carter County. Jerry and Kathy have been innovators in the field of no-till farming and were featured in the book Lentil Underground, which came out a few years ago. So you grew up in Baker, right?
Right, on a little farm.
Oh, it was a farm.
5 miles east of Baker.
Okay. And is it that farm still in the family?
Mm-hmm. My brother currently lives on it.
Oh, okay. What do they raise there?
Now he doesn't really raise it. A little bit of hay and works off the ranch. It's not a very big place.
Yeah.
And works off the farm.
Oh, okay.
For WBI.
What is that?
Williston Basin.
Part of MDU.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So, yeah, they have a house there, and they have a daughter that's moved close to them and built a house and grandkids.
I think they run about 70 head of cows 67. Or something.
Oh, okay. So what was it like for you growing up on a...
It's tough.
Was it?
Yeah.
Hard work?
Hard work, a lot of kids, 10 siblings.
Wow.
It was tough, but, you know, we always had potatoes and meat, and mom canned a lot of meat. Big garden, and dad planted trees, probably when us kids were 8 or 10, and our punishment was go hoe the trees.
So, yeah,
the trees got pretty well hoed. We didn't have any money. But we always got by. Went to high school in Baker, all of us did. And then, the four middle kids went to college. 2 in Helena and 2 in Bozeman.
And you were in one of the younger ones, or?
Second oldest.
Oh, okay.
So I kind of raised siblings
sure.
for a long time.
So you learn a lot about just the basic, you know, work ethic and
taking
care of yourself.
Taking care, we didn't have running water until after Jerry and I got married.
Really?
Him and his brother.
Wow.
Put it in for my dad. So our daughters remember taking a bath in the bathtub in front of the cook stove.
Wow.
Yeah. But it didn't hurt anybody.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
It was just the way it was. And Dad always planted a lot of potatoes, 5 acres.
Hmm.
And I had an aunt that raised a lot of chickens. And, you know, we'd give people potatoes and she'd give people chickens. Everybody neighbored.
Yeah, take care of each other.
It was good. It was good.
Yeah.
Some of my siblings think they had it too hard, but I think they're wusses.
Yeah. So when did you guys get married?
73.
Oh, okay. And we're on the ranch the farm you grew up on, right?
Yep.
This was started when?
1911 was homestead.
Wow, okay.
My grandfather came from Winona, Minnesota, where he had a butcher shop. And they were building the railroad, and he ended up kind of providing the meat for the railroad. And most of that was deer and whatever when they built the Milwaukee Road out here.
Okay.
But he homestead here in 11.
June 11th.
Yeah.
In the papers.
And did he start raising cattle right away or what?
Well, they had crops. It was smaller then.
Sure.
And he had, I don't know how many uncles. And I think there was 5.
Is that right?
Plus my dad. And every one of our places, Leo's is one place over here where Leo. Happy had another little homestead, you know, on the homestead. So all those farms are still.
Wow. Are they still in the family?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Huh.
They're all kind of incorporated.
Yeah. So it's all yours now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. And that was your Sikorsky grandfather?
Yes.
Okay.
And then your dad, you had what, like 7 kids in your family? Or
actually, there were 5 of us, all boys.
All boys, right. And you're the youngest?
No, there's one younger than I am.
Oh, okay.
And I had older brother, he stayed, Ed Jr., he stayed on the ranch after high school.
Mm. And you were in the what, Air Force or?
I was in the Army.
Army, okay.
I didn't go right away after high school. Start college until, it's 64, 65.
Mm.
But anyway, I turned 24. I was going to college in 1968, and the draft board called me.
Mm.
And they said, at that point, they were drafting. If you were older in college and not married, you got drafted.
Ah.
So I wasn't smart enough to realize that being in Air Force ROTC, I could have got out of the draft.
Oh.
So the first thing I did was went to Butte and took the test to be an Army helicopter pilot.
Oh, okay.
And went through that and then went to Vietnam flying helicopters.
Right. So you're, how long were you there?
69 and 70.
Couple years or
just
a year. Okay.
Yeah. I had the opportunity to go back in 74.
Yeah.
Anyway,
right toward the end.
Well,
or after it was over.
Helicopter, flying helicopters, and they offered me to go to fixed wing, and one of my very good friends, he flew OV-1s over there. And that's what's called a Mohawk.
Mm.
And helicopter flying was dangerous.
Mm.
But Mohawk flying was really dangerous.
Oh.
Because it was in Laos and North Vietnam. They were recon and close air support.
Mm. Did he come out of it okay?
He did, but he had a lot of...
Yeah, sure.
A lot of...
So was Ed the one you worked for on here then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ed and Jack were here.
He took over.
And they formed a, well, no, my dad formed a corporation.
Yeah, I love that story.
But
tell the story of your dad and the corporation, what happened with him.
I don't know, where are we going with that?
The when he got voted out. Wasn't he one of the first to incorporate around here?
Yes, he was. But him and my mom got divorced and everything went downhill after that, I guess. That's about all I got.
The family voted him out of the corporation, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was. I was young enough when they did that it didn't. It was a hell of an uproar.
Yeah, I'm sure. So when did you then eventually take over the...
Pretty much after I came home from Vietnam.
And oh, okay.
I joined the National Guard and flew helicopters out of Helmand.
Mm.
And that was to supplement my income, which turned out pretty good. And then we got married, and Ed had some real... health problems.
Oh, okay.
Really bad health problems.
Yeah.
Finally died from leukemia.
Oh, did he? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So he must not have been that old then, huh?
He died in 2002.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So 20 years ago. Almost.
Sure. So did you guys know each other in school? No?
No.
No, because he was quite a bit ahead of me.
Okay.
In high school. And then after he came back, after he got out of the military.
Yeah.
I met him.
That's when you met.
Yeah.
Did you go to Baker?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm really curious to know about how you became so interested in the no-tilling and the way you've approached crops, because it's so different for this area. So how did that come about?
Oh, we started working. She was working with the NRCS, and they had...
What's that?
Natural Resources Conservation.
Okay, gotcha. So what were you doing there?
I was just, filing, doing stuff.
Okay.
I don't have
administrative
like that. Mostly administrative work.
Okay, gotcha.
But anyways, he brought home a lot about people were having success at rotating crops, cover crops, and different. The lentils we raise now, we purchased as a grazing crop.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were designed to be a grazer.
Wow.
And it turned out the black beans, black lentils, turned out to be the most popular lentils that you can.
But he wanted to know why you started no-tilling.
In my later years in the National Guard in South Dakota, I flew airplanes that normally fly at about 30,000 feet.
Okay.
And I flew all over the U.S., and you can look down on the countryside. You go into Texas or California or New York or Connecticut. You look down there, and there's so much erosion in the spring and in the fall. There's burning you get a real good picture. The airplane was about 300 miles an hour, and you didn't have a lot of time to look at the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to change,
You were noticing the effects of the erosion.
Yep.
And you thought you needed to do something to change that.
And then we got kind of involved with Dwayne Beck out of the research farm in Pierre, South Dakota.
Mm.
And he had done a lot of work about, he came from the dirty 30s into the drifts and snow fence, and I mean, the thistles in the fence, and they'd be drifted under by sand and
More
plowing.
Right.
He had a new, and it isn't hard, you don't spend as much money on fertilizer.
Right.
And you don't spend a lot of money on tractors tilling and killing the dirt.
Right.
Fuel,
yeah.
And it just seemed, it's really come to be, there's just an awful lot of people. Neighbors used to laugh at me.
Yeah. When did you start?
When 95 we planted those, 18 years ago we planted those lentils.
Okay, so almost 20 years. Now, so when you started bringing this stuff home, what prompted you to do that? You just were...
Well, we talked about it a lot.
Okay,
you knew
he was interested.
Right, and could see that tillage, disking, whatever, just was ugly. It was too awful. And so he read all this stuff, and we talked about it, and we got no-till drills, and the first year was ugly.
Was it? Yeah.
But as we've moved forward...
Yeah, you just learn.
Once you get the soil health built up and don't kill it by tilling, it becomes relatively easy, and then you can start rotating crops that really enhances the soil instead of buying commercial fertilizer.
You're listening to 56 Counties on Yellowstone Public Radio, and my guests this month are Jerry and Kathy Sikorsky, who have been practicing no-till farming in Fallon County for decades.
Why don't you explain, real simply, the no-till, the whole strategy? So you grow cover crops, right?
Yes.
And then what? And it's kind of a mixture of different things?
We raise cover crops, some for wildlife and some for grazing.
Okay.
We graze the cover after it's, in the wintertime, like last winter, we barely used any hay on 300 head of cows.
Wow.
They just grazed all winter long. And we had a lot of snow last winter.
Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps working for us.
Mm-hmm. Dalton has started taking soil samples. And this spring, he went and sampled where he wanted to put the corn, and the spring wheat, I believe.
Yeah.
And got the samples back. Those told him how much existing nitrogen we still had in the soil.
Oh.
So normally, you guys put on 60 pounds.
60, 70 pounds.
And he had two fields that were going into corn with that he only needed to add 10 pounds.
Hmm.
10 pounds of So you don't do that.
Because of the crop we had in the field.
Oh, okay.
You know? Huh. So, yeah, it's a great deal.
Yeah.
It's good for the soil. It's good for the pocketbook.
Yeah.
The price.
Well, and, you know, I noticed it when you took me out on the place last time I was here, or when we did the interview originally. I noticed the difference in the soil from, like, our place over not that far from here. This soil is so much, has so much more color and texture and odor. I mean, the whole thing. You can tell the difference. Yeah.
You can smell a healthy soil.
Yeah. So the idea is to keep, by not tilling, it just keeps regenerating all the organisms.
Building soil. Keeps the bugs alive.
Right.
And keep crops on it all the time.
Yeah. So yeah, how did the lentils evolve into becoming your main crop?
Well, it isn't our main crop.
It isn't?
No. It isn't our main crop because we can only market about 400 acres worth.
Oh, okay.
The market's not yet developed.
I see.
But it could be, they can graze these kind of lentils, but we never do. We harvest them and we have to keep a rotation. So like we normally plant about 3,000 acres. So you have 3,500 acres of corn and then we have alfalfa in rotation.
Oh, okay.
And then the crops for grazing cattle, because I like that a lot better than feeding cattle.
Yeah, sure.
In the wintertime.
Yeah, it's building soil health. Mm-hmm. Cover crops.
You guys just just donated a bunch of lentils to various causes that are helping with feed people that are struggling because of the coronavirus. How did that come about?
Well,
we probably had one too many martinis that wondering what we, you know, what do you do?
Was it your idea?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're sitting here and we're, you know, and it's so awful.
Yeah.
There's so many hungry people.
Yeah.
And so we're just sitting here and we're like, well, you know, we don't have money, a bunch of money to give.
Mm-hmm.
And
but we had a hell of a crop of lentils last year.
Is that right?
A million pounds?
Wow.
And we only had contacted about 400 acres at
1,500 pounds.
We 1,000 pounds per acre, but we had 1,500 pound yield pretty much every place with black lentils.
Mm.
And we have, and they're just perfect. They didn't have weeds in them. We clean them for seed, and the people that buy them to sell, they clean them a couple times, but we eat them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an abundance of those, and it will store forever.
Sure, yeah.
I heard on NPR that outside of Jerusalem, they discovered a city underneath the sand, and they excavated it and they explored it, and it was about 3,000 years old, and they had granaries built out of stone that had lentils stored in them, and they were still viable seeds.
Wow.
So they've been around a long time, and been a staple for eating. Mm. People don't realize that you could, like a pound of black lentils will serve 8 portions. So you could feed, and that's high in protein and low in carbs.
Oh, it's got a lot of carbs.
Well, it's got a lot of carbs. But it's a wonderful thing, and you can keep it. You don't have to refrigerate it. You put it in a burlap bag.
Yeah.
And you can keep it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take much, and it's easy to cook.
Right.
Better than beans, or it's just a wonderful, you can, how many meals can you make out of it? You can replace pinto beans and all those other kinds with black lentils, and it's got way more protein.
So talk about Fallon County a little bit, how much it's changed since you were a kid. Why don't you start?
I don't, you know, until I started high school in Baker in 62, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated in 66 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There was an oil boom.
Oh, there was?
Yeah. It was a busy town. And before that, you know, my brother and I'd ride into the A&W on our saddle horses and take home root beer. And it was just a real kind of a hokey lifestyle, yeah. I guess you'd say. And then, you know, we only had one car, so we'd all go to school together. And then I went to work at L. Price Company the summer of my freshman year.
Okay.
And so I worked every summer then and, you know, would help mom get groceries, whatever needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But Baker was bustling.
Mm. Was it?
Busy.
Yeah.
It had clothing stores. It had restaurants that weren't just in a bar. It had three grocery stores at one time.
Wow.
And it was...
Drive-in theater.
Yeah.
Mm.
And an in-town theater, mm. bowling alley. And then after the last bust, it never came back. And now, you know, people are saying this Keystone Pipeline is going to bring it all back.
Oh, is that supposed to come through here?
Yeah, they're going to put in an 800-man man camp.
Oh,
right outside. Just west. Baker.
Is that right?
Oh. Yeah, it's being constructed right now.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is kind of scary.
Yeah.
All the buildings, you see these modules.
Mm, yeah,
they put them on a semi and they're about 8 foot wide or 10 foot wide and they're all air conditioned. They hook together
mm-hmm.
and they have about 50 acres of them up here in Miles City.
Wow!
And they're coming to Baker.
Hmm.
In fact, we sold the rights to mine gravel on a portion of land we have up here north of here.
And I was here the day that guy approached you about
right.
that.
That's right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, anyway, he's digging it right now.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And the price of crops right now, he's probably going to excavate about 80 acres. And that might be 2 million yards of dirt
uh-huh.
or gravel.
Right.
And at $2 a yard, that's a lot of money for 80 acres of land.
Mm-hmm.
And they're forced by the state to reclaim all that. When the gravel pit is
right.
done, it has to be brought back to its
original
itself. They don't have to bring the gravel back, but they're set up for crops again.
Sure.
Or any use of hay crops or anything.
Yeah.
But it has, once they finish their pit, it has to be all reclaimed.
Mm-hmm. So is it still, I mean, since the boom or the bust, has it been primarily agriculture then here?
Oh, there's been a lot of oil activity.
Oh, there's still
a lot of there's still a lot of oil activity and production maintenance and pipelines and. There's been a lot of, but
brings some jobs around here. And
there, this last deal, this coronavirus has really cut down because nobody's buying anything.
Right.
Nobody's flying on airplanes. That,
yeah, yeah.
And you can't fly around in the sky with no passengers, so you don't burn much fuel, and the demand for oil is down to.
Yeah, I've been pretty shocked at the price of gas lately.
In fact, here a couple of weeks, you'd have to pay for somebody to take it.
Mm.
But it's back up to $30 a barrel.
Mm.
But, you know, it wasn't too long ago, it was $180 a barrel.
Wow.
Same oil.
Mm. So, how many kids do you guys have?
Two.
Okay. And so neither one of them are interested in taking
it? No, our oldest daughter is 52. And she's a school teacher, married to a young man that's 54, so north of Plevna. Tunby, Randy Tunby is his name.
Okay.
And so they are on his father's place.
Oh, okay.
And they raise sheep and livestock and hay. And they have two children. Abby is a school teacher in Freud, Montana. And Zane has set his sails for Wyoming. He wants to be a cowboy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, and then our youngest daughter lives in California. And does like IT tech work.
Okay.
And so she flies all over, and her son Dalton is 30 years old, and he came back to the ranch about 4 years ago.
Huh.
And was tired of California and wondered if the offer was open for him to come back here. And we're like,
yeah.
Yeah. And it's worked out well.
So he's the plan is for him to take over?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool that he was interested.
I know.
I mean, a California kid, you know.
Well, and we raised him.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so when he graduated from high school, he went to Spearfish for a couple of years and got a
BA. Oh, okay. Did he go to high school in Baker?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then he was
associate.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And then he went to Bozeman.
Okay.
And pretty much party.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
that's shocking.
Yes. So he quit college. He was there a year and then a fall semester. And in January, I'm like, so how is it? It's fine. Well, he had signed up and had just decided it wasn't his cup of tea.
Mm.
And it was too late to get the money back.
Oh.
And so I'm like, you know, I always promised you that we would never say, you owe us.
Yeah.
But you owe us. And you get your butt over and you get to work. And he did. And then that's when he wanted to go to California.
Mm.
And Jerry's like, if you want to go to California, but you have got to have $10,000 saved up. And he worked three jobs. He worked here full time, bartended, saved his money, bought a pickup, and moved to California. And he was there 2.5 years, maybe?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he just said, you can't. It's not like here.
Yeah, you know, so he wanted to come back.
You can't. And that was a good thing for us.
Yeah, that's working out for everybody. So is his plan to continue pretty much as you've been doing, or raising, and is he going to continue to raise livestock too?
Well, we gave him and his friend live in our other property across the road, and we offered them both. They could buy 20 head of cows each.
Okay.
And then we charged nothing for the feed, nothing for the pasture, nothing. So it's pretty much they just had to pay for their own cows. I told them to go to the PCA,
Farm Credit.
In Bowman, and they got really good financing.
Mm-hmm.
And their 40 head herd is approaching 65.
No, they're
20
PCA.
Wow, okay. So this was an old schoolhouse, right?
Yeah.
You know anybody that actually went to school in this building?
Well,
you did?
I did.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yes, I went to school here.
Wow.
Until eighth grade. Yeah, it was weird.
That's funny. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not very many people can say they live in the building they went to school in.
You've been listening to 56 Counties. 56 Counties is produced by Russell Rowland for Yellowstone Public Radio. The music is written and performed by Aaron Parrott. Additional funding is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. More information and archived episodes are available at ypr.org. This month's guests were Jerry and Kathy Sikorsky, who run a no-till farm just outside of Baker in Fallon County. Please join me the first Monday of each month at 6:30 for 56 Counties.